Parsha of Chukas opens, of course, with Chukas HaTorah, with the Parah Aduma. And Rashi comments, famously, on the phrase Chukas HaTorah. As we know, there's many expressions for different types of mitzvahs, and a chok is a mitzvah whose reason is unknown to us. And Rashi here says, Lefi Shasatan v'umas ha'olam monim es Yisrael. The Satan, which I guess is an anti-voice from the inside, umas ha'olam, nations of the world from the outside, monim es Yisrael, they oppress or antagonize Yisrael, lomar, ma mitzvah zos. What's this mitzvah about? It's very nice that they take an interest, but it's a negative interest. What's this mitzvah about? Umatam yishba, what's the reason? And to that end, therefore, the Torah writes concerning this mitzvah, chukah, as if to say, Gezeirah milthonai, it's a divine decree, ein lecha reshus leharher achareha. You have no permission to think about it in terms of trying to fathom what the reason might be and what to think of the mitzvah when you can't work out what the reason is. Interesting to note, and it's a discussion, I think, for another time, but this idea of chok, referring to a mitzvah whose reason is beyond us, is not the first time that Rashi has spoken about it. In fact, by my reckoning, Rashi has spoken about it at once per Chumash, so far. For we find this word in the way that activates Rashi in all Chumashim. In Parshas Toldos, Hashem says to Yitzchak that Avram kept by Yishmor Mishmarti, Chukosai, Mitzvosai, Sorosai. Rashi comments the chok is one of those mitzvahs that we don't know. In Chumash Shemos as well, Sham Samlo Choku Mishpat, Ushmatem, Vazantala Mitzvosav, Shemata Kol Chukov, Rashi comments a mitzvah whose reason we don't know. In Chumash Vayikra, in Parshas Acharemos, Ushmatem is Mitzvosai, Vasisem is Chukosai, Rashi comments, and so too here. But what's very interesting is that the causality of why it's called a chok versus not knowing the reason or the reaction of Satan and Umas HaOlam here seems to be reversed. As if to say, generally Rashi says, this is a reason, what is a chok? It's a mitzvah that we don't know the reason. And as a result of having such a mitzvah, it brings about the following reaction in the Satan and Umas HaOlam. As if to say, its existence and its classification as a chok begets that response from Umos HaOlam, which makes sense. They see a mitzvah like that, and they react, and they comment. Here, if you watch carefully, Rashi didn't say that. Rashi didn't say, because it's a chok, Satan and Umos HaOlam ask what the reason is and why you're doing it. Actually, Rashi mentioned those ideas in reverse. For Rashi says, since the Satan and Umas HaOlam ask, what's the mitzvah about? Lefichach, therefore, the Torah calls it a chok, as if to say, you can't question it, and you don't know. So in other words, it seems not so much that they're responding to the Torah calling it a chok, but rather the Torah calls it a chok in response to their derision. Which is very interesting. Indeed, the Lubavitcher Rebbe points this out. I tried to look at least at the Mefarshei Rashi that are within arm's reach and didn't find a resolution, but it's an observation that's well worth pondering, especially for one of these Rashis that we're so familiar with and never really would look at in that way. In any event, a very interesting question with regards to this Rashi, and of course Rashi is based on the words of Chazal in the Medrash. How do the Umos HaOlam react to Chukim? They laugh at them, they scoff at them, and there's not really much we can do about it. An interesting question with regards to this is raised by the Ran in his Drushas. Ran has a famous Sefer of Drushas, 14 Drushas, and at the end of Drush Aleph, the Ran raises a question on this statement of Chazal from explicit words in the Pasuk. But the pasuk itself describes how the umas ha'olam relate to our chukim and react to our chukim, and what type of comment they would make. And that pasuk is in Parshas Vayeschanan, the very beginning, in Devarim Perek Dalet, pasuk Vav. And it's again a pasuk that we know, but perhaps we don't put it together in the discussion with this well-known Rashi. The pasuk reads, Ushmartem v'asisem, shall keep the mitzvahs, you shall perform the mitzvahs, ki chochmastem uvinaschem, that's your wisdom, that's your insight, le'enei ha'amim, in the eyes of the people, umos ha'olam, asher yishmu'un es kol ha'chukim ha'ele, they'll hear these chukim, ve'amru, and they'll say, rak am chacham v'navon, ha'goy ha'gadol hazeh, ah, what a wise nation. Look at those chukim. These are a super wise people. Interesting. I think Rashi seemed to say exactly the opposite. Rashi says they hear these chukim and they think, what is it about? Why are you doing it? It's a source for derision. Whereas according to the pasuk, when they hear about the chukim, it's a source for admiration. What then is the resolution here in terms of what the reaction that the chukim are meant to evoke in the eyes of the umos ha'olam, for what it's worth? That's the question of the Ran. And the Ran gives a very elegant and simple answer. And that is, the reaction of and people's assessment, the nations of the world, to the chukim, to the laws, to the irrational laws of the Jewish people, it really depends on how the Jewish people themselves are faring. As if to say, nothing normal ever happens to the Jewish people, as we know. The Chazal tell us, and even Zeresh understood, that when they're up, they're all the way up. And when they're down, chas v'chalila, very down. Which means that their destiny is either very good, or perhaps opposite. Now, what distinguishes the Jewish people from the nations of the world? Probably chukim more than anything else. As if to say, the mitzvahs whose reasons are well understood, well, other religions, lahavdil, they may have similar or equivalent mitzvahs. It's specifically the chukim that no one really has anything like that. So the question is, well, what do you make of the chukim? And then it depends. You see, the answer, says the Ran, is to be found in the following pasuk in Devarim, where it says, Perek Dalet Pasuk Zayin, Ki mi goy gadol, asher lo Elohim krovim elav, what other nation has a spiritual force that is close to them, kashem Elokeinu b'chol kareinu elav, as Hashem is close to us when we call him. In other words, says Ram, what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying is, if the Jewish people are in that state, where Hashem is close to them, wherever they call, whenever they call him, when the Jewish people are doing well, when they're at their best, when they're at their apex, when they're succeeding, so then the nations of the world say, what's their secret? I mean, there's so much that they do that we do. I mean, what do they have that we don't have? And the answer will be, well, they have the set of laws. No one can work them out, but apparently they work. They do something for them. That's a level which is beyond anything that we could imagine, and that must be the secret of their success. In other words, when the Jewish people are succeeding, the nations of the world look at the chukim differently. They no longer look upon them as irrational, but they look upon them as super rational, tapping into a higher level of wisdom altogether. It's when the Jewish people aren't doing that well, then they become the subject of derision, because the nations of the world say, you're not doing that well, and look at your laws, they don't really make that much sense. And that's when the Satan Umas Ha'olam voice the words that Rashi quotes in their name. So it's a very interesting explanation, resolution really, of these two ideas. And we find, in fact, someone experienced this in the Navi, and that's Naaman, a famous Syrian general. Naaman, he had his case of tsaras, and no one could cure him, and he was recommended to come to Elisha. And Elisha told him that his cure will be to dip in the Jordan 7 times. Naaman's original reaction was to laugh at it, as if to say, I've got rivers back in Syria that I could dip in. I need to not come here and dip in the Jordan. Except someone said, listen, you know, with all due respect, nothing else is working. You don't have anything to lose. The worst that can happen is you'll get wet. So he tried it, and it worked. And at that point, everything changed. The very things that he was laughing about, because they didn't really seem to make much sense, before he was cured, he then came to revere because they didn't make much sense once he had been cured. Because tachlis, it worked, and no one could explain it. And that's when Naaman says, I see the Jewish people, their God is mightier than any others. And Naaman really went through these two stages of first saying, what's the reason? But in the end said, Hi chokhmaschem uvinaschem, I don't know, they've got it. So these are the Ran's comments with regards to Chukas Hatter. I'd like to move now to the episode that, of course, dominates the Parshas Chukas, and that's the Mei Meriva. And as we will see, there is quite a bit to say. And I'd like to present an understanding of this episode, which is very enigmatic and not really explicit in the Pasuk itself. What went wrong? We really need to read between the lines and then read the lines again. What was the chait of the Mei Meriva as a result of this? Moshe Rabbeinu can't go into Eretz Canaan. Something went terribly wrong. What was the chait? The simple understanding that we always must begin with, what seems to be what the Pasuk is saying, is that he was told to speak to the rock, but then he hit the rock, and noch, when he hit the rock, he hit it twice. Which sounds like when things went wrong, they went very wrong. It almost seems like insult to injury. And as a result of that, he wasn't able to go in. We, of course, need to understand what's the difference between speaking to the rock and hitting the rock. Most people that we know couldn't do either, so they're both miracles either way. Why is it the difference decisive? So much so, it's a difference between Moshe going in and not going in. Now, one thing is for sure, and that is that there was a consequence of this episode, and that is, as the Pasuk says explicitly in Perek Kaf, Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe vel Aaron, Yan lo hemantem bi, Lakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, because you did not believe in me, or promote belief in me, Lakdisheni to sanctify me, le'enei b'nei Yisrael, in the eyes of b'nei Yisrael, Lachain lo saviu esaka lazeh el ha'aretz, Hashem osakti lehem, so you will bring this congregation into the land that I have given them to Eretz Canaan. Here it's phrased as you shall not bring them in. As we know, Moshe and Aaron didn't even go in as private citizens. It's all or nothing, it seems. But what's clear from the Pasuk is that the fallout from the Mei Meriva was that they could not go into Eretz Canaan. Now, there is a statement of Chazal that needs to be considered in light of this. And that's a Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Vayeschanan. In Vayeschanan, Moshe is davening, Vayeschanan al Hashem, Ba'isahe Lemor, Erbrana, he wants to go into Eretz Canaan. And at a certain point, Hashem says he can't go in. Not only can he not go in, he tells him to stop davening. Vayomer Hashem Eli, Rav Loch. It's enough. It's enough. Al Tosif Deber Lo Od Badavar Azeh. Don't talk to me about this anymore. Rav Loch. And the Gemara, actually, in Maseches Sota, in Daf Yud Gimel, quotes one of the Amoraim, the sages of the Gemara, Rabbi Levi, and he sees in these words, Rav Lach, illusion. And the words of Rabbi Levi are, Berav Biser, Berav Bisruhu. He told other people Rav, so he was told Rav. Where did Moshe tell other people Rav? Actually, the reference is to a pasuk in last week's Parsha. For when Korach gets everybody going, Kikol Eilu, Kulam Kadoshim, etc., Moshe says, Rav Lachem Levi, Rav Lachem. And therefore, he told Korach enough, and therefore, he was told enough. Berav Biser, Berav Bisru. And the question, of course, is, firstly, what is the connection between one Rav and the other Rav? And secondly, it seems to be giving us a reason for something that's provided explicitly in the Pasuk. If you wish to know why Moshe can't go into Eretz Canaan, the answer is black or white in Parshas Sukkas, because of Mei Meriva. Yan lo he'emantebi, lakdisheni, le'nei ko b'nei Yisrael. And yet somehow, Rabbi Levi and the Gemara there says, what was stopping Moshe from going into to Eretz Canaan was he said to Korach, Rav Lach, so then Hashem said it's too much and enough, and you can't go in. How does Korach fit in with this whole episode of Mei Meriva? Now, there is a very interesting explanation of what went wrong in this parsha in the Mei Meriva from the Sefer HaIkrim. The Sefer HaIkrim is one of the great, really philosophy svarim from the later Rishonim, Rabbi Yosef Albo, a Talmud of the Ran, I believe. And according to the Sefer HaIkrim, the problem with Mei Meriva was not that Moshe hit the rock instead of speaking at it. The problem preceded that. We know what happened before that. Well, Moshe says, Shimon HaMorim, he calls them rebels. And some people say that's the chet, says the Ikrim. The problem preceded that as well. In fact, the problem existed even before Hashem had said anything to Moshe. And that is something that we will need to explain. Where is the anchor of the issue here with the Mei Meriva? Well, says the Ikrim, when the Jewish people are without water and they're complaining, so of course we always need to take with great caution our assessment of what it means that Jewish people are complaining. On the one hand, we, in a more comfortable setting, it's clear to us that they shouldn't have complained. Where's their faith? On the other hand, they're a nation full of people in the middle of the desert and without water. Anyone will complain. It's better not to complain, but certainly they should be met with our understanding, even if it's not correct. But in the end, it's not correct. And that means that one could say the situation of the Jewish people at this stage, there's no water and they complain and they think they're going to die, actually means that they're missing two things. Number one, they're missing water. Number two, they're lacking emunah on to a certain degree. Now, says the Ikrim, one of the yesodos of Torah, and he sees it as central, is that fulfilling the words of the Torah has its effects on the natural world. In a sense, that's really Shema. Im shamar tishmo mitzvosai v'nasati mitar tachem bi'ita, when the Jewish people fulfill the Torah correctly, so then the world runs as it should. Not only is that true for correct conduct, but people who have risen to the higher levels, tzaddikim, as we know, the Gemara tells us, tzaddik goes there, v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim, the tzaddik says, and Hashem fulfills it. As the pasuk says in Iyov, v'tigzor omer v'yakem lach, you decreed that, talking to the tzaddik, you decreed that Hashem will uphold it for you. How is that so? It's a symptom or an expression of the madrega of the tzaddik, that he is so connected to Torah that his decree, so to speak, about the natural world will hold sway, will be upheld. And of course, that's really what behind all the many, many stories that we have in the Navi and in Chazal about the Nevi'im and Tanoim and Amoraim, all the miracles of the supernatural events that happened. That's Tzadik Gozer, V'Kadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. You've got Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, who says, whenever he speaks, he seems to be doing something like that. And his daughter, she was upset. She filled the Shabbos lights with vinegar, and he said to the same God who says that the oil will burn, so vinegar will burn. It's all the same. I think many people can say that, but if you're Chanina ben Dosa, it happened, because Tzadik goes there, V'Kadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. And that idea is really critical for Bnei Yisrael, because they need to appreciate what is at stake by fulfilling the mitzvahs, conversely, by transgressing Averis. And therefore, if a tzaddik, someone on this level, should ever be in a situation where, naturally speaking, there is no water or there's some dire need for something, he should be able to act, not only to fill the need, but also to establish this principle of tzaddik goes there, v'kadosh baruch hu mekayim. And if he doesn't, then in a sense he is casting aspersions on this idea, because here's the tzaddik, why doesn't he do something? Now you'll say, well, it's impossible. But there is no possible within reason for a tzaddik. Tzaddik goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. Such a person is Moshe Rabbeinu. And perhaps we may add, parenthetically, and Aaron. Aaron is a silent partner throughout the whole of the Meimariva, but he gets punished as well. Apparently, whatever Moshe could have done, Aaron could have done. Otherwise, why should he, just because he's standing next to Moshe, how come he can't go in? And therefore, and it's a major statement, the Ikrim states that the primary mistake, or the primary shortcoming of the episode of the Meimariva happened at the first stage, when the Jewish people complained and Moshe didn't do anything, but rather he waited. And in fact, if we have a look at the psukim, the first few psukim of Perek Kaf, so the Jewish people are complaining. Pasuk Vav is Moshe's response. Moshe and Aaron. Vayavo Moshe v'Aaron mipnei haKahal el Pesach al Moed. So they come from before the Kahal. Mipnei haKahal to the Ohel Moed, they come to the Mishkan. Vayuflo pneihem. In other words, they kind of submit completely to, you know, what is Hashem going to say to do? But the Ikra says, but they should have done something. That's quite a thing to say. I believe that there is support, although the pasuk doesn't say anything explicitly. There's still support for what the Ikra is saying, I think, from the psukim themselves, or more correctly, I should say, from the parsha itself. It's interesting to note that when we talk halachically, or in the purest terms, about the concept of a parsha in the Torah, we're not talking about the weekly parsha. We're talking about parshas as paragraphs, for the Torah is divided into paragraphs. And there's two types. There's what's called ptuchos and what's called stumos. The difference between them is, does the next paragraph begin at the end of the same line or the beginning of the next line? If it's at the end of the same line, so the space is kind of boxed in, that's called stumos. If it begins at the beginning of the next line, so then the rest of the line is blank of the original, the first paragraph, that's called psuchos. It's open, and that's what you will find in the Chumash. It says pei and samach. Pei and samach is psuchos and stumos. Okay. This is the Torah's way of indicating that something has concluded and a new parsha begins. It's fascinating to consider, and I haven't seen anyone who talks about this. If you look at the end of Pasuk Vav, Vayavo Moshe v'Aaron, Mipnei HaKahal, HaPesach Ol Moed, Vayipla Paneim, so the people have complained, Moshe and Aaron come to the Ol Moed, Vayikud Hashem Aleihem, Pei. Meaning, end of paragraph. End of Parsha, which is actually quite amazing, because in our understanding, this isn't the end of the Parsha of Meimariva. This is actually the beginning of the Parsha of Meimariva. Nothing's happened yet. I mean, it's been set up. They're complaining, and now what? But that's not the end of a Parsha. The Torah is telling us that it is the end of a Parsha. And I think the understanding is like what the Ikrim says. It's happened. Whatever went wrong has happened already. There may be yet a way to make it right. There may be yet a way to recover. And that we'll see. That's the next parsha. But by the Torah concluding a paragraph, when things in our assessment have just begun, is the Torah's way of saying things have actually finished. Something's happened already. The parsha has ended. Maybe it can be reopened. Possibly. Now, what we should ask ourselves, though, is, I mean, this is not the first time that the Jewish people, shall we say, are in trouble, are in need of something, are without something, and they come to Moshe. Moshe never acted proactively in this way, beginning from the Yamsuf, almost from the beginning of their career as being led by Moshe, comes to the Yamsuf, they complain. Perhaps Moshe could have split the Yamsuf by himself. We don't even think about that. Whatever happened to Tzadik goes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. He didn't do it. Hashem told him to raise up the staff and he split the Yamsuf. That's okay. The same thing is true in Mara. After we went through the Yamsuf, we came to Mara. The water was bitter. Moshe doesn't do anything. Hashem tells him what to do. The same thing is true when they're hungry. Where's the food? Hashem tells Moshe the man will fall. Moshe doesn't say that the man should fall. And the same is true for the Slav. And therefore, in a sense, the question is, if this is true, that Moshe is, shall we say, faulted for not acting proactively in a time of need for Bnei Yisrael, how come he's never been faulted before? This seems to be number 5 or 6 on one of those episodes, which is a good shaila. Well, the Mefarshim say the reason is that Moshe, it can be explained. Generally speaking, Moshe, as we say, Ish Moshe Anav Ma'od Mikala Adam, he's the most humble person. It's slightly incongruous with the humility of Moshe, and of course it's a deeper question, but to then all of a sudden start decreeing that this should happen, one can certainly and acceptably put it down to the humility of Moshe that he never wanted to take active measures. The only problem is Moshe did just that in Parshas Korach, because when Korach and his men got going, so Moshe calls for something to happen. He doesn't ask, as far as the pashtus of the psukim is concerned. He doesn't ask, but rather he calls for something quite drastic. The earth should open up, swallow them up, and it happens. What is that? I mean, that's tzadik goes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. Now, we understand, of course, that's something that Moshe certainly had to do, in the sense that the entire question of Moshe Emes, Baterasa Emes, Torah Min HaShemayim, the Nivu of Moshe, it's all being called under question. Moshe needed to take decisive action. Quite so. So that's 100%. However, there are repercussions for later events. Moshe can no longer be passive in the face of a national need. Because if Bnei Yisrael are thirsty and they say, well, can't Moshe do something? He's a tzaddik. Whatever happened to tzaddik goes about HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. And should you say, well, you know, Moshe doesn't do that sort of thing, they will say, well, he did, like a week ago, in Parshas Korach. So he no longer has the ability to remain passive. That's how the Mefarshim and the Mesha Chachma explains in that way. And in fact, it's possible that this explanation goes much further back. In the Drushas Afike Yehuda, one of the classic Sifrei Drush from Rabbi Yehuda Edel of Slonim, he explains that the roots of this idea are to be found in the words of Rabbi Levi in the Gemara in Sota, Barav Biser, Barav Bisruhu, which told us that Moshe said to Korach, Rav Lachem, and ultimately he was told, it's too much for you, you can't go in. And our question was, what's the connection? Ma inyan Korach, Itzel Moshe Rabbeinu, going into Eretz Canaan. I mean, it's because of the Mei Meriva, is it not? However, says Afike Yehuda, what Rabbi Levi is saying is that Moshe would have been excused for not hitting the rock, for not doing something, because true to form, throughout the time in the Midbar, Moshe is never proactive. However, because he became proactive in the episode of Korach and said Rav Lachem, he no longer has the option of being passive. And if he was passive, that the indictment comes from his actions in Korach. That's the juxtaposition there. And therefore, ultimately, it is because of Mei Meriva. But Mei Meriva not acting, not assuming an active role in the Mei Meriva, only assumed such dimensions because he was, yes, active in the time of Korach. He can't say to Korach, Rav Lach, and then go into Eretz Canaan. And therefore Hashem said to him also, Rav Lach. So that's a very interesting understanding of what the Rabbi Levi means to say in the Gemara, and its confirmation for the Mesha Chachma and for all of those others. Korach really changed things in that way. From that point on, Moshe was active, he's got to remain active, in that sense. And in fact, the Sefer Ikrim suggests that perhaps, it's impossible to know, but perhaps this is why we find that Yehoshua, who takes Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Canaan, when the time comes that the Jewish people are in need, he calls on something the likes of which the world had never seen before. They're in that war, if they don't finish by the time the day is ended, it won't, the victory will not be decisive, Yehoshua calls for the sun to stand still. I mean, that's quite a thing to say, and he wasn't told to say that. I mean, that's tzadik gozev, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. He's not backwards and coming forwards at a time like that. It's quite a demand. And the Ikrim suggests that Yeshua was conscious of the fact that his Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Jewish people were in need. He refrained in terms of tzaddik goes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. Yeshua does not hold back. He asks for whatever needs to be asked, and indeed it happens. So thus far, we really have looked upon Moshe's lack of initiatives, so to speak, to use the phrase carefully, as pretty much the end of the parsha. I mean, that's it. However, it is possible that Moshe could have recovered from this, that he could have undone the damage, so to speak, of remaining passive. And let us try and see how. Not only will we see how he could have undone the damage, we will see that in a sense he partially did undo the damage, just not completely. How so? So we need to look very carefully, closely, at Pasuk Ches of Perek Kaf. And as we see, we're in the Psukim now. So Hashem says to Moshe, Kach es hamateh, take the staff, Vakele sa'eda, atov aranachicha, gather everyone together, v'dibartem el ha'sela, the famous, speak to the rock, le'ineim v'nosan meima, v'il give its water, v'hotzei salahem, or v'hotzei salahem, mayim min ha'sela, draw out water, v'hishkiso es ha'eda, v'es bi'iram. Now, the pasuk, it seems, is quite clear, self-explanatory, but we should note two or three things. Firstly, the pasuk is doubled over, because it basically refers to getting water out of the rock twice. Firstly, it says, kachas amato, etc. Firstly, v'dibtem el ha'sela le'ineihem v'nasan meimav, speak to the rock, it will give forth its water. And that's that. And the pasuk goes on to say, v'otzei salahem mayim min ha'sela, take out water from the stone. But if you've already spoken to it, and it gave its water, so there's no water then. So then it's happened. So then, what's the second stage or the second phrase of taking out the water? It's a good shaila. Furthermore, we should note that the first clause states v'nasan meimav, it will give its water. To whom? Doesn't say. But the second phrase says v'hotzeisa lahem mayim min ha'sela, bring out for them, which means somehow that the water that the rock gives seemingly is not for them, but the water that Moshe takes out is for them. How? What does that mean? And another interesting point, again looking closely at the pasuk, is that the water itself is referred to differently in these two clauses. The first clause says, V'dibartem el ha'sela le'einehem v'nasan meimav. Meimav means it will give forth its water. What's its water? Well, the water from the rock. Okay. Then it says, V'hotzei salahem mayim min ha'sela. Take out water from the rock. Which water? Its water. But it didn't say meimav. The first clause says meimav. The second clause says mayim. These are the questions of the Afike Yehuda, and when you think about it, I mean, they're very medactic, these questions, and the Pasuk says, Darsheni. So what's the resolution? There's a very interesting comment of the Zohar HaKadosh with regards to the episode in the Navi, when Elisha, that woman came to him, and her husband had passed away, and they were heavily in debt, and well, the creditors were coming. It's the Melachim Beis, it's the Haftorah for Parshas Vayera, and she had no money. So Elisha says to her, well, Ma Esalach, what can I do? Tell me, Agidin Ali, Ma Yeshlach Babayas, do you have anything? So she says, I've got a flask of oil, Ki Masuch Shem Hashem, and that's basically it. So Elisha says, you've got a flask of oil, okay, so let's work with that. So he told her to borrow as many kalim, as we know the story, as many kalim as she could from her neighbors, put them all in a room, close the door, and come back later. So she did so, right, and of course what happened was the oil began to overflow and it filled all of the kalim, and she found herself with an abundance of oil. Elisha says, now you have with what to pay off the creditors and also to have parnasa for the moment. That was the episode there. And it's interesting that clearly this is, I mean, what is this? It's a miracle. But Elisha asks, what do you have? In other words, he was working with what she had. He didn't say, well, you know, this item could sell, close the door, when you come back, you'll have a room full of that. But if you have oil, so then we'll do with the oil. How so? So the Zohar HaKadosh says that because bracha comes from increasing that which exists, there needs to be a base in existence in order for bracha then to increase it. But something that's not there at all, so then bracha's not going to happen. So Elisha says, you have anything? You have oil? The oil can increase. What you don't have can't happen. It's called Yesh Me'ayin. That's the statement of the Zohar HaKadosh. Except, says Afike Yehuda, I mean, what are we saying? We're saying that Hashem can increase something, but not make something where there was nothing there. Hashem could do anything. So why is there this restriction, this limitation, that it can only work if it's to increase something? Well, says the Afike Yehuda, this is the difference between when Hashem does a miracle and when a tzaddik says that something should happen. If Hashem does a miracle, anything can happen. When a tzaddik is asserting himself over nature, there are yet rules, there are yet parameters, and specifically it works through bracha, and therefore if the tzaddik will go there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim, so then that has to work on an existing base to increase it. A tzaddik can't be goes there for something to come out of nothing. That's just, it doesn't work that way. And interestingly, Elisha, he prefaces his words by saying, Ma e'eselach, what can I do for you? Which is establishing that what he's about to do is something that he is doing for her. He's aware of what he can do. As Tzadik goes there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim, this woman is in need, he's prepared to do it, but he can only do what he can do. Ma e'eselach, you've got to tell me what you have, because I can't make a gezeira for something out of nothing. And that is the limitation of Tzadik Gozer, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim. Whereas, of course, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu does something, so then anything can happen, even Meshav Ayin, it doesn't really matter. And with this in mind, after that introduction, let us now return to our Parsha, see what happens. For here we are at a situation where Moshe is already at fault, so to speak, because he should have done something. Jewish people are thirsty. He acted with Korach. He should be acting now. Tzadik Gozer, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim, and give them water. But he didn't. Is there any way that he can recover? Well, says Afike Yehuda, yes. The way that Moshe can recover in the absence of him initiating the miracle is to, at the very least, now act as an agent for a miracle that he could not have brought about, namely a miracle of Yesh Me'ayin. If at the end of the day it's about strengthening the emuna of Bnei Yisrael, it's either emuna in a tzaddik as a tzaddik of Hashem, or emuna of Hashem himself. And therefore, the only way that Moshe, in a sense, can make good, can save the fact that he didn't proactively do anything, is to at the very least now act as a catalyst for the type of miracles that he couldn't have done, that only Hashem could do. And that is to produce something out of nothing. Well, is there water in a stone? There is. I mean, everything has some elements of moisture in it. And therefore, really what would have happened had Moshe done something is that he would have taken that moisture, he would have increased it exponentially until any amount of water could come out. But now, if he's acting as an agent for what Hashem will do, so the way that it can be a miracle that's exclusive to the domain of Hashem is actually to remove any trace of the moisture from the rock, and get rid of that, and then have a rock without moisture at all and take water from that. That's something that only Hashem could do. Which means that Moshe needs to actually act in two stages. Let's go back now to Pasuk Ches, where he's told to do that. The first clause says, V'dibartem el ha-sela le'enehem, speak to the rock, V'nasa me'imav, and it will give forth its water. What is its water? What's the water of the rock, as opposed to water that will be mentioned later on? The water of the rock is the element of moisture that exists within the rock. And the first thing is speak to it, and it will give forth. For whom? Not for them. This is not to be then used by the Jewish people. There's almost nothing there. It will be a small pool of water or something like that. Less even. But so it's not for the Yisrael. It's an only to completely remove it. Leave the rock as something completely without moisture. And then, stage two. Votseisa lahem. Then from that rock with no moisture in it at all, bring out water for them. Min ha-sela bishkisa esa'edo be'es bihiram. That is why the word lahem only exists in the second clause, because it's the second stage where water will become from nothing, from no moisture at all, for Bnei Yisrael, and that's lahem. That's not called meimav, that water, because it's not the latent moisture within the rock, it's actually completely extraneous to the rock. And there, with thus, says the Afike Yehuda, we've actually answered all three questions with regards to Pasuk Ches. The two expressions are two stages. The first is to remove the moisture from the rock, and the second then is to produce water where there's nothing at all for Bnei Yisrael. It's for this reason, says Afike Yehuda, that Moshe was told to speak to the rock, and speaking to the rock is of the essence. In other words, that's why it makes such a difference. Because if it's a question of just utility, getting water from the rock, it doesn't really make a difference how. He's been told before, he can do it again. However, since it's about demonstrating and bringing about a miracle in a way that clearly comes from Hashem, and only the Hashem could do it, even a tzaddik couldn't do this, as tzaddik goes about Kadosh Baruch Hu Mekayim, it has to be the nth degree removed from any type of thing that the tzaddik would do. He may normally hit the rock, which is some type of physical trigger action that could, in spiritual terms, make a difference. It's got to be absolutely removed. Speaking in that way represents a much more rarefied interaction with the rock. No one could really do that were it not for the fact that it's Hashem who's performing the miracle. That's why the difference between speaking and hitting normally would make a difference, but now it's of the essence, because the entire justification of Moshe at this stage, saving, so to speak, the strengthening of Emunah, this is something only Hashem could do. Moshe, in the end, hit the rock, and the reason why, as Mefarshim explained, is that he felt that the ability of this miracle to happen was dependent on the level of the Jewish people. They're also part of the equation. Not only the level of the tzaddik, the Jewish people also need to be on level. Moshe did not feel that they were on level, that's hence the addressing them as Shimon or Hamorim, and therefore he didn't feel that they deserved that water would come out just by speaking. He judged that it was, and maybe it would backfire then, because if he spoke to the rock and nothing happened, that would just make things worse. This was the very difficult decision of Moshe, and therefore he departed from Hashem's strict instructions. But in one respect, he did fulfill the idea of a miracle that only Hashem could do. Because he hit the rock. He hit it, but he hit it twice. And we saw the hitting of the rock twice as being just making things worse. He hit it once, why did he hit it twice? He hit it twice as Afike Yehuda because there are two stages in play here. Stage number one is the Nasan Meimav, all the moisture should come out. And stage number two, to hit it again so that water would come from nothing. And therefore, in that respect, Moshe was faithful to Hashem's instructions of these two stages. However, unfortunately, tragically for him, he did this through hitting the rock and not through speaking to the rock, and on that he was punished at this stage. So this is a completely new understanding of number one, that Pasuk Ches, which is where everything is focused, and number two, of the notion of Moshe hitting the rock twice, what exactly that means. That actually was correct. Something had to happen twice. It wasn't correct to hit the rock, but whatever happened had to happen twice. And what's fascinating to consider, just in a conclusion of this incredible explanation of Meimar Riva, which I think has many, many new points to it, is that this idea of these two stages is referred to by the Pasuk elsewhere. not in the Chumash here, but in Tehillim, in Hallel. We say, at the end of the second paragraph of Hallel, B'Tzeis Yisrael, soon to be Rosh Chodesh, so we say, Milafnei Adon Chuli Aretz, Milafnei Eloka Yaakov, Ha'ufchi Hatzur Agamayim, Chalamish Lemayno Mayim. Well-known words. Ha'ufchi Hatzur Agamayim, he changes the rock into a pool of water, Chalamish Lemayno Mayim. And then, again, another type of rock, Lemayno Mayim, to a spring of water. So we note, of course, number one, the pasuk is doubled over, and whenever that happens, Mefarshim are on the alert. Because what happened? I mean, how many rocks are we talking about? Secondly, the verb changes. In the first part of the pasuk is talking about Atzur, that's a rock. The second half of the pasuk talks about Chalamish. What is Chalamish as opposed to Atzur? Is it the same thing? If it's different, then is it a different rock? And thirdly, the first part of the pasuk talks about Ha'ufchi Hatzur Agamayim. What's an agam? As opposed to the second half, which talks about Mayno Mayim. Well, says Reb Yitzchak of Veloshin. Reb Yitzchak of Veloshin, the son of Reb Chaim, who took over as the Rosh Hashiva Veloshin, and we have certain Divrei Torah from him. The pasuk, I mean, it's mamish in league with the Afike Yehuda. The pasuk here is describing these two stages. In other words, the difference between a tzur and a chalamish is a tzur is a normal rock. Chalamish is what we call flint, and it can produce fire, so to speak, because there's no moisture there. And therefore, stage one was to turn or to produce from the tzur agamayim. Now, what's an agamayim? It's a pool or a puddle. It's a collection of water. There's very little there. That's not going to help anyone. But it's stage one to remove that agamayim from the tzur. Once all the moisture had been removed from the tzur, it's not a tzur anymore. It's chalamish, right? It's that type of rock that has no moisture at all. From the chalamish came mayim. That's a stream of water. So that's a wonderful biur in that pasuk in the Hallel. For all the times that we sing it, it's kedai also to pay attention to it. And this is the biur of Reb Yitzchak of Veloshin. So that's the understanding of the Meimariva, a very wonderful interpretation from Yafike Yehuda. I'd like to move from here, and again to stay within Hallel, actually, because in Tehillim, well, Hallel, I say Hallel, Hallel HaGadol, I should say, Tehillim Mizmor Kuf Lamed Vav, where the pasuk there refers to an episode really that took place in this week's parsha, namely the conquest of Sichon and Og, the perek of Kilolam Chastos, the 26 Kilolam Chastos, and we say Lemachim Melachim Gedolim Kilolam Chastos Vayog Melachim Adirim LeSichon Melech Hamori LeOg Melech Habosham VeNosan Arsam LeNachala Nachala LiYisrael Abdo. Every pasuk really followed by Kilolam Chastos. Okay, and it recounts all the wonderful things that happened to Bnei Yisrael. We make reference of Sichon and of Og. Now, it's interesting to note, again, keeping an eye on things, that the Perek in Tehillim, which immediately precedes Kuf Lamed Vav, namely Kuf Lamed Hei, which we also say in the extra Pesukei Dezimra for Shabbos, which begins, Halelu Avdei Hashem, She'omnu Beveis Hashem, B'chatzos Elokeinu, also talks, has very similar psukim, lemakim melachim gedolim, or without the kilolim chastos, but lemakim melachim gedolim, harig melach vadim, lesichan melech harimuri, ulaog melach haboshan, ulachol mam lechos kanan, benarzan arzan nachla, nachla yisrael amra. So the two psukim are very similar to each other, but that's all the more reason to look closely at them and see that they're not exactly the same. Specifically, and most obviously, the earlier parak, Kuf Lamed Hei, refers to Hashem giving us the land of Sichon and Og and Koman Lachos Kanan. I mean, that's the Koman Lachos Kanan is 31 kings. So plus Sichon and Og is 33. In Kuf Lamed Vav, in Halal HaGadol, we mention Sichon and Og, and that's it. Whatever happened to Koman Lachos Kanan? That's an interesting shaila. And that question is raised by the Radak in his Perush to Tehillim, and he gives a very interesting answer. Namely, the difference between these two psukim is really the difference in context, because whereas the earlier Perush, Kuf Lamed Hei, recounts all the good things that Hashem did for us, and of which there are many, But Kuf Lamed Vav has a very specific orientation, and that is, as every pasuk ends, Ki Le'olam Chasto. Ki Le'olam Chasto means the word concept of chesed is something that is above and beyond the call of duty, about within the letter of the law, the extra mile. That's chesed, chesed chinam, ki le'olam chasto. And because Kuf Lamed Vav, Hala HaGadol, focuses exclusively on ki le'olam chasto, it only mentions things that are acts of chesed. Now, should we say, and what is this meant to explain for us? Why the kings of Canaan aren't mentioned? But shall we ask, well, what? Giving us the land of the kings of Canaan, that's not an act of kindness? Says Radak, strictly speaking, no. And the reason why is because the definition of kindness is something that one doesn't have to do. Now, it's true that initially Hashem doesn't have to do anything. However, he did promise the land of Canaan to Avram. And once he's promised the land of Canaan, that was a kindness, to promise the land of Canaan to Avram. But once he's promised it to Avram, so then to give it to his descendants, that's not called kindness anymore. That's called making good on his word. It's not kind to keep your word. It may be kind to make a promise, but to keep it, that's truth. And in fact, this is the Radak's explanation of the recurring phrase that we find throughout Chumash, when people ask for what's called chesed ve'emes, also in Tanakh, chesed ve'emes. What is chesed ve'emes? Are they not? Are they the same? Are they different to each other? Says Radak, there are two stages. When you wish to extract a promise for someone that they don't need to promise you, so it's called chesed ve'emes because to promise it is chesed. They don't need to promise. But once they do, it's emes, to keep their promise. And therefore you're saying, do me a kindness and undertake this. But once you undertake it, you're bound by your word. Chesed ve'emes. And the same is true, therefore, for Eretz Canaan. It was originally given as an act of kindness to Avram, but then by that stage, when it's given to, when it, Hashem is good on his word, so that's already an act of truth more than kindness. And in fact, that's how the Radak explains the pasuk in Hosea, Micha, where we say regularly in the Tefillah, Titein emes li Yaakov, chesed l'Avram. Hashem ishbat l'avisedim, we make keder. Emes le Yaakov, Chesed Avram. Says the Radak, it's a reference to Eretz Canaan. It's Emes to Yaakov because by the time Yaakov came, it had already been promised as an act of kindness to Avram. So it's Chesed Avram, what begins as Chesed Avram, then evolves as Emes le Yaakov. And therefore, whereas the earlier perek, once again, we're comparing Kuf Lamed Hei with Kuf Lamed Vav. Whereas Kuf Lamed Hei mentions everything because it's not restricting itself to acts of kindness, but rather acts of goodness. Well, everything is an act of goodness. Sichon, Og, and all the Kol Mamlechos Kanan. However, when we then move into Halal HaGadol to Kuf Lamed Vav, which is about Ki Le'olam Chasto, says Radak, there's no mention of Kol Mamlechos Kanan. Because Kol Mamlechos Kanan is Emes, Emes LeYaakov, yet that's not Chesed at that stage. But we do mention Sichon and Og, and the reason why is because although it's a major discussion, the land of Sichon and Og on the east side, which will then yet be petitioned to be settled by Negad, Bnei Reuven, etc., but the Radak understands that wasn't part of the original Eretz HaMuvtachat, right? The Eretz HaMuvtachat is from the west side of the Yarden, not the east side. They were able to settle it. That may well be. But that's an act of kindness, because that's not part of the original promise. And therefore, as we move from goodness generally to kindness specifically, we talk about those territories that were yet an act of kindness, because they're not part of the original promise. That's the land of Sichon and Og. There's no mention of Kol Mamlechos Kanaan. And what's fascinating is, just continuing this theme that the Radak has initiated, Reb David Tevel, who's one of the great Talmidim of Reb Chaim Mivolozhin, in his Drashas Beis David, says, with this in mind, we can also understand two other dikdukim kalim, slight distinctions between the phraseology of the two psukim. In the first parak of Tehillim, it's good to get a shir in Tehillim from the greats. The first parak of Tehillim says, Sichon melech ha-Mori, Og melech ha-Bashan, Kom melech ha-Kanaan, V'nosan artzom nachala. V'nosan artzom nachala. The second perek says, Sichan Melech Hermuri, Og Melech HaBoshan, V'nosan Arsum L'Nachala. The question is, what's the difference between giving a land Nachala and giving a land as Nachala? Well, says Dovid Tevel, based on the Radak, we understand. Because the first perek of Tehillim, Kuf Lamed Hei, is talking about Eretz Yisrael generally, it is mainly talking about Eretz Canaan, that's the Nachala. It was a Nachala when Hashem gave it to them. And therefore, we say, V'nosan Arsam, Nachala, for 31 out of the 33 kingdoms, were actual Nachala. But when we focus specifically on those two that were not part of the original promise, that means that they were not originally a Nachala. They were not originally part of the inheritance as the heirs of that promise. But they became a Nachala for Bnei Yisrael because they settled it, and therefore it attained to a certain degree a status of the Nachala, but it wasn't a natural part of the Nachala. Rather, it attained that status. That is denoted by the words V'nosan Arsam, Le Nachala. It became as the other Nachala. That's attention to detail. And moreover, says Rav David Tevel, one final distinction in that way, slight difference between the Psukim. Again, I think Psukim Dezimmer and Shabbos morning may never look the same. In Kuf Lamed Hei, it says, V'nosan Arsam Nachala, Nachala L'Yisrael, Amo, his nation. In Kuf Lamed Vav, V'nosan Arsam L'Nachala, Nachala L'Yisrael, Avdo. What's the difference between Nachala L'Yisrael, Amo, Nachala L'Yisrael, Avdo? Well, says Rav David Tevel, it's again based on the Radak. Because Kuf Lamed Hei is talking primarily about Eretz Kanaan, and that had been promised to us. So to receive it as a Nachala, it's already a Nachala. What do we need to do in order to qualify for that Nachala? Just to be Hashem's people. It's not a function of anything that we do or don't do. And it's headed for us, and we're headed for it. And therefore, with regards to the Nachala, natural, we say, Nachala L'Yisrael Amo. However, the ability to conquer and settle the lands of Sichon and Og, which were not originally part of the program, so that was a product of the level of the Jewish people, that they were eligible for it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided that for them. But once it's a question of behaviorally being eligible, as opposed to nationally qualifying, so there we shift from the Nachala L'Yisrael Amo to Nachala L'Yisrael Avdo. So this is quite something that begins with the Radak, ends with Rav David Tevel. Maybe it doesn't end with him, but continues with him, and certainly an eye-opener to see the events of Parshas Sukkot through the lens of Tehillim as they're being described by David HaMelech, and find their way into our Sidur HaTfilah. We'll leave it over there for this evening. Sure.